You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 466. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Michigan, Mr. Tom Trauma. Hey, Tom.
Hey, everybody. What's going on?
Tom,
by everybody, I mean John and Adam.
How's everything going? Them know John was on. See, that was the suspense.
You weren't gonna keep that secret very long.
Well, I mean, but people might not have known, and they would be like, "Who's here? Is it John?" And then it'd be really exciting when it's John.
Is it just the Tom and Adam show?
You see,
the context 50% here is that, of the people will be happy and 50% of the people will be let down. So it is what it is, right?
You got to let down someone. So yeah, I wasn't on last week's show, although I guess given that when I'm not here, the shows don't actually get edited on time. So who knows what order people will actually hear these in. Speaking of not editing
John
last
and
week's
I
show,
like the we like the mystery of the lost show. It's kind of gives it a certain aura, certain punch.
Yeah, it's a certain aura of like untimeliness and confusion.
There you go.
So yeah, so speaking of Mr. John Gentile, Mr. John Gentile is here. Hi, John.
Hello, Adam. How are you today?
John, that's the most measured you've ever sounded.
It's a new era. It's a new season. It's a new John. It's the fall. I'm here to Zen
sweep season.
It's a sweep season.
We got to get the ratings. We got to get the ratings up, fellas.
Listen, we did a focus group, and the listeners have been clear. They said they want measured, soft.
John is too manic. Can John be 46% less manic? They said
that's right. That's right.
And we said sure, and we gave him a buttload of Xanax.
And plus, they want catchphrases. So I've got a catchphrase now.
Yabba dabba do.
That's actually copyright infringement. So mine is wabba dabba woo.
send me a cease and desist.
Adam, get me out of the hole. Let's get this party rocking.
Oh boy. All right. So anyways, this is the Punk News Podcast. We talk about things that have happened or that we've talked about on the punknews.org website, I guess, and adjacent areas of the internet over the past week. Before we get into anything, is there any mail that you want to talk about?
Yes, you can always use the podcast at punknews.org. Tom, did we do that that Blink-182 mail last week that we talked about?
Yeah, we did.
We got
the big DeLonge controversy.
Adam, I'll just throw this at you. Do we care how we pronounce DeLonge at all, or DeLong, or whatever?
Like I said, John, in defense of the writer last week, I will say that I've only ever heard it DeLong, and being in Dutch country here, that's definitely how we would pronounce it.
Deutsch.
But I also think Blink-182 should be pronounced sucks ass. So, you know, I may not be the best guy to ask about pronunciation.
Well, I can't pronounce anything at the best of time. and even true. Names.
But you do have that charming, thing where you sort of, the OU thing, Adam, that charming Canadian OU thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the Queen's
English,
buys
you a lot
right?
of goodwill.
No, but even names that I think that I can pronounce, I've learned that I can't. So speaking of Blink-182, what would you
call? I think the thing you need to do, Adam, is always go simplest first. Because I think you try to make things more complicated than they are.
Well,
not to be your therapist, but anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
How would you pronounce the name of the gentleman from the Alkaline Trio that now plays in Blink-182?
Grant, Derek Grant.
Yeah. That one. The other one.
At Skiba.
Oh, Skiba, yeah.
See, before anyone had ever said Skiba to me, I just read it as Skiba, and it seemed like a totally normal way to pronounce it.
Wouldn't you think that would have two B's just based on the basic You'd have to have two B's to make Skibba, just based on
I don't know.
The premises just, that, of the English that was, language that you learned since kindergarten.
That was what my brain had read and internalized, was Matt Skibba, and then I was somewhere and someone said Skibba, but when they said it, they really just leaned on the E, right? Skibba. And I was just like, no, what? No. Or maybe I just heard it that way because I realized how wrong I had been over the years. Thankfully, I don't have to talk about Matt Skibba with most people out loud. This is where this show is really fucked up for me.
Honestly, we've already given Blink-182 way more time than they deserve.
Like, this whole show in my life, the only thing it has served is to force me to say out loud things that I would normally just type on the internet
and generate hate mail
and generate hate mail, like, as a result. So I'm not sure that's a good bargain. Well,
here's some hate mail for us from George. All you do is make fun of Blink and Tom. Tom has done more than you'll ever do. Maybe if you made punk welcoming to all instead of dragging on bands that have gotten people into punk, more people would like what you like. Admit it. You got into punk through Blink or some or Green Day. No one gets into punk through whatever obscure English band you might name. Maybe the Ramones, but you had Rancid cassettes before you had a Fugazi tape. From
Who's this directed towards?
I think just us in general.
I can guarantee you that I did not have anything by Rancid before I had anything by the Ramones, but... I might be the only one. 500
years old.
Well, read that again, John. I think I'm gonna got a bone to pick with this bozo.
All you do is make fun of Blink and Tom. Tom has done. I think I mean Tom DeLonge, not you, Tom.
I thought you were talking about. This is more probably direct towards me than me and you, John. Adam, I think, is a huge closet Blink 182 fan.
All you do is make fun of Blink and Tom. Tom has done more than you'll ever do. Maybe if you made punk welcoming to all instead of dragging on bands that have gotten people into punk, more people would like what you like. Admit it. You got into punk through Blink or some or Green Day. No one gets into punk through whatever obscure English band you might name. Maybe the Ramones, but you had a Rancid cassette before a Fugazi tape.
I did get into punk through two very obscure British bands. I must admit, they were called The Clash and The Sex Pistols. So yeah, I'm digging very deep. And that was about 1987. Those bands were about 10 years old. It was long before Blink. And I definitely had Rancid and Clash and Sex Pistols albums long before I had anything by Rancid. Did I say that wrong?
What? Ramones, so you had Rancid before you had Rancid.
No, I'm sorry. I definitely didn't. The first Rancid thing I bought was Outcome the Wolves, which I don't remember what year that was.
95.
Yeah. 95. Anyway, still a great album. I have it sitting on my turntable right now. But new press, not the original. But you know, I the older I get, you know, I don't want punk to be more welcoming, because then you get all these idiots showing up. There's just too many idiots in the scene right now. I don't want it to be more welcoming. So I guess I'm going to take the contrarian approach. You're not welcome, George. Stay home and listen to your link.
Wow. All right.
Seriously. Because if that's, and I've said this before, I think it's whatever gets you into it. I'm totally fine with that. But if you're not digging in, you're not really trying to figure out what it's all about, and you stop at Blink 182, then you just stay home. It's fine. We don't need you.
Wow, I was going to be way more diplomatic than that, but I guess no. So,
I'm just feeling surly. I'm feeling very surly. I'm sure George is a nice guy. I'm just breaking his balls, but I do. I pick on Blink a lot because everybody has a band that they draw the line and say that ain't punk. And for me, it's Blink. And I let the Green Days and the Rancids and all that. I like all those bands. I'm fine with that. Well, old Green Day. But to me, the genre officially jumped the shark with Blink 182.
I mean, I was 17 when Enema of the State came out, which in my mind was like the big...
Well, you're old enough to know better, Adam.
Blink record. Yeah, I was, but like, I was into that record for a little while when it came out.
Me too. I thought it was all right.
So I'm not going to say that I wasn't. And he's right that like I totally was into Rancid before I was into other things. I mean, for me, it was ska. I was into Less Than Jake before I was into anything. My intro to punk was like a snowboarding... CD compilation that they were like they were Capitol Records was giving out these compilations at ski hills, and it had a bunch of whatever was on Capitol in 1997, and there was a track from probably Losing Streak, the Lesson Jake record that was on there, and I got really into that. So like that was, you know, that was how I got in. So it's a fucking like major label compilation given away at I guess at like a thing that rich people do. So I'm not going to judge too much, but I mean,
as long as, you know, your willingness to sort of admit the irony of it, I guess, is a good first step. Well, in like reconciliation.
You can never play something at a ski hill and make it sound like it is like it's like a cool, you know, from the roots kind of thing. Like, no, you're at like a fucking ski hill, right? Like that's places you into a certain
what's
strata.
A ski hill?
The guy giving away the CDs was right next to the Red Bull free sample thing.
You mean a ski slope?
Yeah, like a resort, like a ski resort thing. Like, so when I was in high
school. Oh, not just a hill, John.
Not just a hill. No, yeah, it wasn't a fucking hill in the field and there was the guy there giving away CDs. No, when I was in high school, my high school had
this, like, a ski club in high school.
Yeah, it had like a ski and snowboard club because you could drive from it was like an hour and a half drive from Niagara Falls to Ellicottville, New York, where there's a few ski resorts. There's one called Holiday Valley, and there's one called Kissing Bridge, something like that. And we used to go to Holiday Valley, and I learned how to snowboard because that was something that I wanted to do. Because before we did anything, like we watched a lot of in the pre-YouTube era. This was still the era we were like passing around like VHS tapes of like skateboard stuff and snowboard stuff. And that, you know, made it that we wanted to go learn how to snowboard. So we did that in high school. But yeah, so anyways, that was where I probably first heard anything. It was off that comp. Anyways, though, I don't know. Like I'm okay making fun of Blink on this show for two reasons. One, it's not 19.
It's really funny.
It's really funny. It's not 1997.
Not like roaming swarms of tough guy Blink-182 fans are going to beat you up.
Yeah, like it's not 1999 or 97 or anything like that. So, you know, I totally get why people need those gateway bands to get into it. I don't begrudge them that, but I do begrudge them holding on to the gateway band as something really sacrosanct for like 20 years past its expiry date. Like, there's a lot of really...
Oh, you get them, Adam. Well, I mean, like this. This is a new aggressive Adam showing your Canadian
I listened to a ton of Real Big Fish at a certain point in my life. Ugh. I don't claim any of that shit is any good. I certainly, if you would put on certain songs, would have, you know, these pangs of nostalgia and probably be pretty happy about it. But I'm not gonna try to justify it as being, you know, anything that is that any other human should go and sit down and listen to. Like there are other things to move on to, and that's how Blink's always been to me. And I feel like it's a band that deserves to just live in like the goofy 90s, and the fact that it's become this. Like they've become this beatified thing is very awkward to me. So it feels like something I can make fun of. Plus, all those fuckers are rich, so I don't care.
If you hang around long enough, you become socially acceptable.
Yeah,
and that's because I can relate to that just as a human being.
It worked for OJ.
Well, it worked for me because, you know, I never set out to be any kind of respectable of any, but you just hang around long enough and you become respectable.
But
people start asking you
to
do respectable stuff.
In my mind, the podcast is a place where we can come and be dicks, and the people that for some reason don't unsubscribe to it have opted to join that universe. I would never, and I have never, gone on to Punk News and shit on some pop punk band like in news coverage.
Oh yeah, because, not like, in news coverage,
right?
Only in
because I get that. I get that like people are going to stumble into Punk News on the internet because they've gone into Google and they've looked up their favorite band or this band that they've just discovered. And then by going to something like Punk News, they can discover all this other stuff that's happening in the scene. I get that. But Google is not depositing the young, uninitiated, you know, punk neophytes into the Punk News podcast on episode 598, where we're just like complaining about Danziger Morrissey or something.
I don't think we complain about Blink that much. I mean, if they come up, we complain about them, but it's not like we're going out of our way to complain about them.
We speak about them because people write letters.
Complaining about it today is your fault because you brought it up.
Yeah. So anyways, this podcast is a strange circle jerk, and I don't feel like it needs to be accessible to anyone. Plus, we don't even post. We don't even post the episode.
Brought to you by Capitol Records, 1997 sampler.
Mm-hmm. You know what it was called? It was called compound fracture. That's what I remember because that was a snowboarding injury. But there was a certain point in my life that I went and I tried to find it, and I could not. Like, not that I owned it.
I'm sure it was only on CD, and it's probably like.
I feel like it's a pre-internet thing. Hold on, I'm going to see if it's on Discogs right now. If it is, it's going to blow my mind.
Well, while Adam's surfing the internet, I'm going to read the next letter. This is from Toothpaste 77. I love the show. I'd like when you talk about records you bought. It's a good way to learn about new stuff, and it's like hanging out with your friends playing 45s and drinking beer. Maybe you should have people write in and talk about stuff they got about once a month. I've got a submission. Keep it up. From Toothpaste 77.
What have you been listening to, Toothpaste? What's his submission? Or is that not listed? Is that a separate email?
I guess Toothpaste waiting for us to say send it on over.
I was Toothpaste 77, man. I was ready to listen to your list, ready to hear what it is.
Yeah, well, maybe one of these days Toothpaste will let us know what's happening. You can always just say podcast at punknews.org. But I think Adam's gonna read something off Discogs. Go ahead, Adam.
No, I haven't found it yet. You can't.
Well, you can always.
And Adam, I found that stupid Less Than Jake Megadeth split, and I really want that, but it's so stupid.
It is stupid. I have it.
It goes for like 18 bucks on 7-inch.
I'll sell it to you.
That's probably what it cost me to have you ship it from Canada.
$68, Tom.
Man, Canadian? So that comes out to about 12 American bucks. We'll talk later.
Okay.
Well, podcast.org.
One of those 7-inches where like one side has like 50 million grooves on it, and the other side is just like a little half inch worth of grooves.
Well, somebody should play a song. I'll play a song unless somebody's dying to play a song.
Tom or John, we'll let you play a song. It's not going to be either a major label thing that's going to get us sued. Or like a 10-minute dub track.
Adam, I'll play whatever I want. One variety. And they
time for some censorship on this podcast.
What I am going to play is something major label. As everyone knows, I'm a big Chumbawamba fan. And the cool thing about Chumbawamba is
they get up again.
Well, exactly, precisely. And actually, like everyone talks in the 90s, major labels are horrible. Major labels are horrible. I'm sure. I guess major labels certainly screwed over some bands, but they also made it, I mean, like, they made it possible for Chumbawamba to exist and release, like, literally, like, 7 CD EPs with every album. And, like, an independent label wouldn't have the money to do that. Chumbawamba has so many CD singles, but they're EPs because they've got, like, 4 or 5 tracks on them. And the Chumbawamba, like, CD singles are, like, friggin' awesome. There's so much interesting stuff on there. It's not even on the album. It's ridiculous. So it's a really fun band to collect. So I recently picked up a later day Chumbawamba CD single. It's called She's Got All the Friends That Money Can Buy. And it is a great song. And this is She's Got All the Friends That Money Can Buy by Chumbawamba. Check out the used bins, people. That's where the gold is.
Pull. Her social diary is always full.
And both her faces so easy on the eye. And everyone worth knowing is kissing her behind.
She's got all the friends that money can buy. She's the apple of her daddy's eye. Change. If you have to ask, then it's out of your range.
And both the faces.
Versace and Prada. They mean nothing to me, to me. Well, you can buy your friends, but I'll hate you for free, hate you for free. She's got all the friends that you want.
And we're back. That was Chumbawamba. We should talk about some of the stuff that that happened this week. John, do you want to make any mention of your upcoming event before we?
We briefly discussed it last week. It's the Sonic Attack, November 23 in Philadelphia. It's going to be awesome. Rodney Anonymous bringing his synth punk band. It's going to be Cat Bite, ska punk from Philly, which is kind of like two-tone ska punk, which is an amazing band. Chris from Crazy in the Brains is doing acoustic stuff. It's going to be friggin' awesome. And the opener is going to be Vixen 77, which is five young ladies doing kind of Runaways type kind of punk. And it's friggin' awesome, and it's going to be a good time. $5 to $10 sliding scale. And we're all going to have a good time. It's going to be great. You should come on out. November 23, Creep Records in Philadelphia.
Cool. There you go. So, do we tackle the sticky, weird, difficult story first, or
let's get it out of the way. You know what I mean?
So just so I'm clear, like, no one talked about this at all in the week that I missed, in my lost week when I was in the wilderness.
We did not.
What are we talking about?
And Adam, before we continue, one thing is, you're aware that another website had a follow up article that we haven't been able to confirm. And
but
so,
they had a police statement in that article. They refreshed it with a police statement, right?
Yeah, but I don't know where. Like, I don't know if that was the police talking to them or what. You know what I mean? And then there's other stuff that seems to contradict that. So, Adam, I just want to say, keep that in mind, and also, like, we took a little bit of heat on this. Like, why do you post? Because we're trying to be very careful with this and confirm everything we post, because this is not something we want to screw up. You know what I mean? So I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, I'll dance around this, and you can fill in if I'm supposed to connect dots or not, because it feels like the greater internet has connected more dots than I think we have.
Probably they've probably connected more dots than exist, if we're being honest.
And we've been purposefully cautious about this, because you don't want to fuck up anyone's life or anyone's reputation or anything like that if you do not need to do it. I mean, if you're a band and you want to fuck up your reputation, you can do that by releasing a bad record. You don't need to do it by being involved in, you know, the real world tragedy or anything like that. So here's what's going on. So the only we're talking about a band that a lot of people like and a lot of people love, and it's probably because they're a good band, and it's a band called Off With Their Heads. So they were on tour. They were last actively on tour in Vancouver, BC, and they canceled said tour. They canceled the last two dates up on the Pacific Northwest that they were going to do on this, and they canceled it following an accident involving their tour band. So Ryan from Off With Their Heads posted something, and he said, "Ryan here, unfortunately, I have to make the call to cancel the remaining dates on the North American tour. We're all waiting for more information to come to light. Until that happens, I don't feel comfortable carrying on playing live shows. Due to the sensitive nature of an accident a band member was involved in, I can't elaborate any more than that. When I can, I definitely will do so, and refunds will be available at your point of purchase." So Off With Their Heads canceled the tour. They mentioned in their statement that it was because of an accident. At the same moment, on the internet, and on, I guess, on the local news out of BC, there was a story about a woman that was severely injured in an accident with a van, and it was a pretty grisly injury here. So I'm going to hop to to look at Exclaim's coverage of this, because they went and they connected some of these dots. So I'm using their details here, not Punk News's, to go any further here. But what happened was that there was a pedestrian who was involved in an automotive accident in Vancouver's downtown east side. It resulted in incredibly serious injuries for this person. The loss of an eye, and you know, basically it was a 24-year-old woman. She was hit and dragged by a van and trailer for 5 city blocks. She ended up sustaining life-threatening injuries in the process, and off with their heads have been named in connection with that accident. The band played at the SBC restaurant on Hastings Street in Vancouver on October 12th, which was the night that that this happened. There was a CTV news report that captured an image of a man holding a breathalyzer and speaking with police. The CTV news article features a man who, and this is Exclaim's conjecture here, I'm not making this, they are claiming that the man appears to be Off With Their Heads bassist Robbie Swartwood. So the actual identity of the man in the photo has not been confirmed by Punk News or by the police or anything like that.
Well, actually, the driver has been confirmed as Robbie.
Oh, has it been? Okay, okay, we can go that far. So the further details from the story, I guess, are all just sort of up in the air right now. So you know, you can kind of like put two and two together and assume that, you know, alcohol was involved or whatever. But you know, we're not making that claim because that's not our claim to make. And it is very much a developing story. The internet has sort of like connected all the dots and jumped on the fact that, you know, oh shit, Off With Their Heads was the one that was involved in this accident, and that's horrible. But you know, we've been trying to not get too far ahead of it, because this isn't just some dumb music news. This isn't just like, you know, oh, like a band puts out single or whatever, right? This is like some woman's life, and potentially some person involved in this band's life were significantly and dramatically and horribly altered. So we're not trying to make light of it or anything like that, but it appears that something has happened here. There is a GoFundMe page to raise money for the victim if you want to check that out. I don't really know how to direct you to it on a podcast, but if you look up any of the articles that are talking about this, it tends to be linked from it. And so I've got a couple little thoughts about this, and I'm not exactly sure how we should approach it from a discussion standpoint, because it's a developing story and it's not decided yet. So I don't want to cast dispersions on anyone one way or another about what happened here. But here's something that I recognized on the back end of the Punk News universe that actually made me very happy. And just to kind of toot our own horn here is, so I do very little. I don't want to let on the, like let the secret out here, but I do very little day to day with regards to how Punk News works. Like, I'm basically useless, but I'm still looped into all the conversations that happen on the back end of Punk News. And the active Punk News editors were really trying to not get this wrong, to the point where, you know, they were contacting the Vancouver Police Department to try to get details and get a statement and stuff like that. And that sounds like a little thing, I guess, but you have to remember that like Punk News is basically like a blog. Like it has the, you know, all the organization of, say, like a subreddit or something like that. It's just people on the internet. So the fact that our editors were actually like going through the effort of trying to get the facts straight and not just picking up what other sites had posted and reposting it, it made me happy. It made me happy that I'm like, oh, I don't have to actually do anything here because everyone else seems pretty competent right now. So I'm just going to put that out there. That was nice to see. John, we did get some shit though. So
yeah, I was going back for the weather issue and talking about it on the podcast because this story is not about us. This story is about a band that might have been in a situation that might not have been there for. We don't know yet. And a girl, a young lady, that her life is irrevocably changed. You know what I mean? So I don't want to make this about us, but it does bring up the broader question of news, you know? And this made me very – I guess the reason it really bugged me is because, as Adam was saying, we were very careful with this story. We actually delayed on posting this story. Well, I actually thought, well, should we post this at all? Because it's like – it's kind of a ghoulish story, you know? But so I was going back and forth. Should we post this? But on one hand, the young lady's family did a public post, so maybe they want people to know about it, you know. And if a victim wants us to do something, I would do it, you know. But the other stories, I thought, like when the Ian Watkins guy did bad stuff, no one complained about us posting that. So if someone in a band does do something bad, and I'm not saying anybody off has anything bad, and actually we don't know yet, but no one. There's been no charges of anybody doing anything bad yet. But if someone in band does something bad, I guess that is kind of news. But anyways, so we got some blowback, especially from one label. It really annoyed me. Is this one label like they nobody's got any class anymore. No one has any manners anymore. Instead of and this guy knows me. We don't know me anymore because I defriended him. But a semi-prominent indie label went on Twitter and said, "What the F is up with this bullshit? You were posting tabloid bullshit or something like that. A lot of F words, a lot of S words. And the guy knows me. So I said to him, I said, yo, email me if you got a problem. I didn't say it like that. I said, email me. I said, it's not tabloid. So he emails me and he's going F this, F that. And I'm like, first of all, why are you being so disrespectful? We haven't been disrespectful to you at all. And B, this is not tabloid. This is the opposite. This is news.
No, it's the caution, proceeding with caution.
And it's being published by CBC. Like that's the exact opposite of tabloid. And then I said to him, so it really isn't tabloid. And then he gets back to me again. It's like, well, I think it's tabloid. And so, like, I didn't get a fight with him. I'm not going to fight with this guy over this. But it's like, no, you don't think it's tabloid. It's your friend is involved in a situation that you wish he would not be involved in.
And we weren't the only ones covering it.
We actually cut from the punk world. We actually were, actually.
Are you sure about that?
I am sure. I know someone else covered it after us, but we were the first for sure. And I didn't feel great about that because like so it's fun to break an interesting like the Misfits are playing Philadelphia. That's great fun to break. You know what I mean? Or something even better. You know like a ridiculous story like Yellow Card is suing some rapper. That's funny to break. You know what I mean? That's just funny. This is not a fun story.
The story is not as fun as the headline, but yeah.
This is not a fun story. So anyway, the guy was being rude. And I'm thinking, you don't actually think this is tabloid. In your heart, you know it's not a tabloid. You just want us to censor it because it's your friend, or not run it because it's your friend. And I know a lot of people in the punk world like to offer their head, guys. And from all accounts, they're all really good dudes. But it's a very dangerous slope to not report on unfavorable stories to people that we like. You know what I mean? Like when we post on Ian Watkins, he's a bad guy. No one complained. When we post on the Dear Landlord guy, we got lots of hate. But I mean, he was selling drugs and that killed somebody. You know, one complaint is punk news is too much of a gatekeeper and they only post about what they want to post about. But then when it's things you do want to gatekeep, then they say, punk news, why are you posting about this? This is not news, but it is news. But like you can't have it both ways is what I'm saying. And it sucks when one of your friends is involved in sad situations. But it doesn't mean it's not news. And I'm not sure that people shouldn't know. I think people should know about it, I think. But on the other thing to weigh on this, and I'm still not 100% decided myself, is yeah, we're punk news, and our website is actually the most newsy of all the punk sites. To tell you the truth, we do the most actual news, and that's not saying that much, honestly. But on the other hand, this website is for fun. So do we really need to be posting things that are bad for people, that would make some people's lives difficult? But on the other hand is the girl's family wanted this stuff to get posted to increase the GoFundMe. So are we doing something good by posting it? I don't know. It's all very complicated. And I did appreciate the rudeness when the answer is not clear. You know,
a couple of years ago, and this is actually tangentially related to Off of Their Heads. The last time I got into major arguments with some of our idiot readers, they weren't even our idiot readers. They were just people who showed up because of the story. But if you remember, there was a guy from a band called Dear Landlord who was busted for selling heroin to somebody who had overdosed and died. and he's being charged with something, but that guy from Dear Landlord had played in Off of Their Heads briefly or on their early records or something.
Well, that's
right.
People
were just, and this was public news. We didn't break this story. We didn't do anything with it, but people were, man, I got into it with some people and I got into it with some people enough where they were making me irritated enough that if I ever ran into them in the wild, I probably would have thrown fists. And, now I don't do it at all anymore. Now I won't argue with anybody. I just let the blows glance off of me. But it's, sometimes people freak out.
Did you notice that was kind of weird about this story? Is we were the only people reporting on this that wasn't overtly positive towards Off with Their Heads. You know, we were pretty neutral, you know. The only other punk sites doing were very pro Off with Their Heads, which I thought was a kind of weird, you know.
It's weird.
Well, listen, if it comes out, that this is not on the Off of the Heads guy, we're going to run something, right? Because the fact of the matter is, the news cycle, you know, the problem with the 24-hour news cycle in general, the general news, not punkish news, is that you hear these horrific stories and people react without knowing anything like this and get all worked up about it. And then when it comes out that the cop didn't just shoot somebody in the face, it never gets retracted or that information never gets the front headline. You know what I mean? So only the sensationalist stuff gets the headline. But I mean, when the truth comes out, and it will, and probably relatively soon, we'll roll with it. We'll tell the story.
As soon as the police issue some kind of report that we can get or statement, then we're going to post that for sure. Adam, what were you going to say?
Shit, I don't even – I'm not sure now.
I was going to say, because us
and most of like the punk blogosphere operate in this strange this strange realm of, I guess, access journalism where it's a bunch of us that like we're not – this is no one's job. And you're in it because you're passionate about the art form in the first place. So passionate about the art form implies that you have a certain affinity for the people that are making that art, and that you're there because you ultimately want to celebrate it. Like, none of us got into writing about punk news because we were all that interested in, say, journalism, right? Like, we got into it. Like, you know, because if you were really interested in journalism and you wanted to cut your teeth at journalism, like you could go write about, agricultural news or something that you're not particularly passionate about, but would test your journalism, you know, bona fides there. But that's not the case for any of us, right? Like, or anyone in any of these other sites for that matter. It's like, you know, we got into this because we were into the music first. So then when you put yourself in the situation of, well, in our case, overtly calling ourselves, you know, news, you have to at some point just kind of suck it up and assume that horrible things are going to happen. And by assuming that mantle of news, you probably have to talk about that. And you can't stop at that point and decide that you're going to try to, I don't know, to downplay or defend or diffuse something. It's, you know, if you're in it to be a news entity, you kind of have to be a news entity, which means if something shitty like this happens and it involves a band you really like, you know, I mean, go to your way to make sure you're right about it, of course, and you should probably be doing that for everything, but you have to talk about it. Yeah, you have to mention it, right? The argument that like, oh, we shouldn't talk about this because it is outside it's outside of our lane. Like it's not just regurgitating a press release. So why are we doing it? I think that assumes too much about our relationship with the PR world. It's like the PR world was inflicted upon us after we took this mantle. We didn't enter into this hobby so that we could regurgitate press releases.
But Adam, you bring up a great point. We discussed a little bit before, but the problem is a lot of other sites have decided, well, we're just going to be press release. That's all we're going to do. You know, that's a problem, you know, and what that. that's a battle that we're fighting now more often than we used to, is that we don't just do press release stuff too, you know, like so-and-so's putting out a new album, here you go. We're one of the few punk sites that really does do new non-press release news, and that angers a lot of people.
It's funny because one of the first things that ever happened on Punk News that made Aubin realize that we can actually operate as news was I forget what band it was. I think it was Guttermouth or something like that. Like Guttermouth was on Nitro and they signed to Epitaph, or they were on Epitaph and they signed to Nitro. Like I forget what the actual story was, but. Like Aubin went and posted that back in like 1999 or whenever it was that we started, because the news came across his desk. And then like someone from the label on which the band had left, like called him up and was like, did that happen? And he was like, yeah, like, you don't know. And he was like, no, we don't know. And it was like, oh, okay. Like you can actually, you know, there are threads that you can connect between things that are happening in the music world that are not just being fed to you by a PR person. So you know, it's kind of in the DNA of Punk News that we do that. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it puts you in a weird situation. I mean, I'm okay talking about us on when we're talking about this story right now, if for no other reason than the full facts of the story aren't out right now. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't want to give my commentary on, you know, substance abuse or responsibility or drinking and driving or any of this shit, because then that
we don't even know.
We don't even know if any of that's involved. Right. So,
well, the stories like this, unfortunately, bring out the worst in our idiot readers. And not only that, the people
come in from all over. Tom,
that's true. That's true. But it actually brings people in from all over. But it also brings in a bunch of outsiders because of the weight of the story. And everybody's already decided what's happened. They're either pro off of their heads, or they're pro this girl and anti off of their heads. And they're making all these wild sort of accusations. That's not coming from us. That's coming from the readers, from idiots who are saying, oh, this band should just be the whole band should be in jail, or, you know, or other people saying, you know, talking against the girl. I haven't seen a lot of that, honestly, but it's like everybody's, you know, made up their mind already and they don't even know. That's the internet in a nutshell, isn't it? We don't know anything, but we've made up our minds. And you know, the great thing about the internet is it's so democratic. Everybody gets a vote. Every voice is equal. The worst thing about the internet is that means stupid people and uninformed people and intentionally uneducated people have the same voice as everybody else. It's infuriating.
Yeah. I can't argue with that at all. So in any case,
I am surly tonight, guys.
This is a thing that is developing. So we're making mention.
Somebody come to my house, like, smack you around a little.
The sad thing is in that sense, there's no winner here. You know, there's no happy ending here. You know, that sucks.
Yeah, if this turns out to be 0% off of their head's fault, it still sucks. It's still tragic. You know, 24-year-old girl, their face ground off.
Horrible. Horrible shit. All right. Yes.
Only in Canada do these things happen.
Yes, we are. We're that's the thing, right? You want to talk about my election we just had? Okay, so here, let's talk about vampires. Let's get off this, sad, horrible topic here.
And, let's move on to something a little more serious.
And we will awkwardly swerve into this story here, where on October 28th, The Damned, Classic punk rock band. Everyone should know and love The Damned. They are hosting and playing.
The Damned, I got into them through Blink-182. Right. I got this Blink-182 cassette.
Exactly. It's a direct line between What's My Age Again and, you know, Grimly Fiendish.
I certainly heard Blink before I ever heard The Damned, so I'm not gonna shit on our poor letter writer. Like you assholes. Oh, so anyways, yeah. They're hosting and playing The Night of a Thousand Vampires, which is a thing that happens at London's Palladium. And not Palladium, what is it? Paldium? Did we just spell this wrong?
Palladium.
I feel like we've spelt this word wrong in our article. By we, I mean you. So the band is hoping to
Listen, Adam. You're free. You're free. Listen, I'll get the ladder. You can come down off your high horse, and you can, you know, copy edit articles.
It's about to get real up in here.
So okay, so the band is hoping to make this the largest gathering of vampires ever recorded, and they are trying to get into the Guinness Book of World Records. By doing this, so they are requesting that people come dressed as vampires. And upon arrival, you have to sign in to confirm your Dracu status. The band is going to play two sets at this show here. So this is as I understand it from my Canadian perspective, a vampire is not real. So I don't exactly understand how this works. However, This is Europe, so things are different over there. So here's how it works.
England, they get very little sunlight over there. It's much easier to be a vampire.
So to qualify as a vampire from the Guinness Book of World Records, to qualify as a vampire, you have to meet the following criteria. For the gentleman, full traditional vampire fancy dress costume, which would normally consist of the following: black trousers, black shoes, waistcoat, shirt, black cape, or collared overcoat, and a different color inside shirt is permitted, and fangs on top of the said teeth. For the ladies, an evening dress is required: black, white, or red, with any such elaborate Victoriana or Gothic attire in keeping with the theme, plus red lipstick and also fangs. So I don't quite understand how a bathroom reader that's run by a beer company gets to decide what a vampire is. That seems that seems like a little bit of a strange strange leap for them. But John, being John, when he wrote this article, points out how this doesn't actually cover many, many vampires.
That's not from us. That's from the Damned.
Oh, that's from the Damned. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought this was you. This seemed like a very you kind of thing. Okay. So the Damned, all right. I'll credit them to this. So they point out in particular that, this leaves out your Nosferatu. What's the plural of Nosferatu? Nosferati?
Nosferatus.
Nosferatus. Your Christopher Lee.
I bet you it's Nosferati.
Your Count Yorga smoking jacket, your The Hunger, which is kind of like a well-dressed mod, your Lost Boys, in which you are dressed like a hot 80s guy, your black leather
your
black leather underworld getup, or your Sparkle Vampire Twilights and all of that. So they like to mention that this leaves out a vast number of
this is only the classic vampires.
Of the vampires, but you know, if you can walk in there looking like Bela Lugosi, that's what Guinness wants. So the Damned is doing this. So they're playing two sets to a whole lot of people wearing goofy fake teeth.
Basically, a bunch of people dressed like Dave Vanian, except for with fake teeth.
Which is a thing. Is this dumb?
No, it's awesome and hilarious.
Yes, it's dumb, but I would totally go if I were able.
This is great. What do you mean? I mean, what's your definition of dumb?
It's just a silly gimmick, but it's fun.
Is it dumb for the Damned to do, or is it dumb that the Guinness Book of World Records is being so strict? Yes. Dumb. The Guinness Book
of they're both dumb.
But this is hilarious. No, this is hilarious and fun that the Damned are doing it.
Dave Vanian's supposed to be like a vampire, right? I mean, that's what he dresses like.
The Damned have always embraced both the serious horror of horror movies and vampires and that kind of stuff, but also the self-aware silliness of it. And they've done that in equal measure. That's what they're doing here. And this is good. But above all, the Damned have really always been about fun, you know? And so this is going to be fun, and this is great, you know.
It would probably be a fun show to be at.
Better this than, you know, Green Day going, "We're the father of all mother effers," and we're sponsored, and we're being sponsored by the NHL. You know, what would you rather have?
I heard Green Day is trying to break the world record for most sad people in one arena at the same time.
I think they're breaking the record for the biggest sellouts, especially in 2019.
Previously held by Detroit Lions fans. Ooh.
So this is hilarious and awesome, and it's the damn just being wacky and fun. I mean, it's only one gig, and, you know, who more fitting to have the world's biggest gathering of vampires in the Dam? Like, almost nobody.
Yeah, it could be worse, right? It could be like AFI.
Yeah, right.
I will not be going to this show, but I would think it would be fun.
If you were a real vampire, this would be a great night to get out in the town and blend in.
Heck yeah. So many suspects for every neck that got sucked.
All I can think of is that this show is probably really unsanitary. Because everyone walking into this show, to be a legit vampire, you are walking in with false teeth in your mouth. No one wants to wear false teeth for more than, like, 3 seconds, right?
Oh, it's just those plastic ones. You can stick them in your pocket. Yeah,
sure, but yeah, so exactly. So everyone's taking these like, spit-covered plastic teeth out of their mouth the second they can get a drink in their hands, right? And throwing them in their pocket. Yeah. And there's a lot of spit. There's a lot of spit at this show. I don't think it's been considered. It's gonna be gross.
Although I'd love to be at a show with 1,000 other people dressed as vampires watching the Damned. Sounds fun to me.
Yeah, covered in all their bacteria.
Huh, small venue, only holds about 2,300 people.
That's big for the Damned.
Yeah. No, I that's such a classic venue. You know, you hear throughout the years the punk bands playing at that place. I didn't realize it was so small.
Well, you know, Live at Leeds is like a cafeteria.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, like Leeds is like astoundingly small and not a music venue at all.
Really?
Huh. I always picture that as like a fancy hall,
right?
Well, shit, I pictured it as like an outdoor stage on the top of a hill for some reason.
Yeah, I thought it was outdoors too. Also, my band will be playing a show where we're trying to have the largest gathering of Frankensteins.
Ooh.
So it's like four?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all it takes. All right. Speaking of goth, here's a song. So there's a band out of Vancouver called Woolworm, and they've got a new full length, their third. It comes out on November 8th on Mint Records. The new record is called Awe. It is the follow up to a 2017 record that they had out called Deserve to Die. But that record was way more hardcore influenced than this one. I saw Woolworm play in the basement of a comic book store in Toronto a few weeks back, and their new sound is just rad. It has this like this great sort of like 80s new wave gothiness to it. There's a lot of like kind of like a darker take on some like Smithsy kind of college rock that's going on in there, but still that underpinning where these guys were all from like a hardcore background. It's great stuff. So I can play the first single from Woolworm's Awe. It is called Hold the Bow. And it's cool. I really like this record. Check it out.
As if know that you exist is enough to know. Hold the bowl.
Woolworm, they're on Mint. What else do we want to talk about, John?
Misfits playing Philadelphia, baby. I just announced today, although it was teased the day before. What makes it somewhat actually, it makes it doubly interesting for two things. First of all, another Misfits show. Danzig was going on and on. Madison Square Garden is going to be the final Misfits show. He said it's probably going to be the last one for a while, is what he said. And by a while, he meant like a month and a half, I guess. But not only that, I know a lot of people that went from Philadelphia up to Manhattan. I almost went myself and blew $500, but I didn't because I said, well, do I really need to spend $500? And the answer was no. And now I don't have to. Now I can sit here and pay $500 to see them too.
But at least it'll only take you a half hour to get home.
That's true. So the first thing is, Danzig was saying, you know, it's the end at Madison Square Garden, but clearly it isn't. Is that cool or is that uncool? And also, the Madison Square Garden show is 2 weeks before Ticketmaster halved the price of a lot of tickets, which upset a lot of people. So what should your ticket strategy be for this show going forward? And doesn't it suck that we live in a world now where, like the price is not the price. You know what I mean? I've lived in countries where the price is not the price, and it sucks. It sucks, and it's a bad trend.
Where is the show in Philly?
I think it's at – I'll tell you 1 second. It is at Wells Fargo Center.
Okay, so I assume that's where the 76ers play?
Right.
So that's got to be 20,000 seats or so.
Yeah, just about that, right.
In a secondary market, yeah.
Philadelphia is secondary?
Well, compared to New York.
Well, everybody's secondary compared to New York.
Yeah, well, but I mean, New York didn't even sell out.
It did night of, actually.
Did it? Okay.
But they might have just said that just to make themselves look better.
You know what? You're right. I saw that. Yeah. I think you'd probably be all right to wait, but who knows? It's one of those things. If you want to go, I've been the guy who bought tickets and then saw tickets discounted. It sucks. But I've kind of learned over the years what to look for and kind of have a good feel for it. But I wouldn't want to miss it, you know, the bottom line.
Do you think it's cool that Danzig said no more shows when he clearly knew there was going to be more shows?
I don't know. I've been holding out for a Detroit show. So I didn't go to the Chicago show, which actually was in Rosemont, a suburb of Chicago. I have a problem with the idea of seeing the Misfits at an arena. It's just not the way you're supposed to see them. So, but I've been kind of holding out for Detroit because that was where the original Misfits lineup played their last show, was in Detroit. So I would love it if they played their last show in Detroit again. I would probably go, but I don't know. I haven't made one of these shows yet. I could have went to Chicago for suburban Chicago at about a 3 hour drive, but same situation. It would end up costing like $500.
Yeah.
And I just, it's a hockey rink. Why am I watching the Misfits play in a hockey rink, John?
Because that's the only place you're going to get to see him. That's the answer.
No, I want to see him at the Creep Records. John Gentile production.
I do it.
Show, you can, like, come on, go back to your roots, dude. Come and play this record store.
I do it, you know. I do my usual spiel. Hey, Glenn, do you have a guarantee, or do you guys want to work off the tour?
You might be able to get Doyle over there, like with his horrible solo material. I don't know.
Yeah, can you guys play on Crazy in the Bane's drums? Because, you know, they already got the back line set up. So,
well, it'll be Crazy in the Bane's backing up Doyle. Now, that could be good.
I don't really have an opinion on this story. It's a thing that's happening. I was going to make some sort of like Green Day joke because they're playing in a hockey arena, but I don't know. So, anyways,
what takes you to one of these shows, Adam?
A travel time that would not fuck up my life and family. Like
money? Is there a amount of money that would would you pay $100?
I would pay a couple $100 to go see this. Yeah, I would, but I would if I could like drive 2 hours and go to Toronto, or if I could like cross the border and go to Buffalo, or I don't know.
You're not driving down to Philly.
I'm not driving to Philly. Philly is like a 7 hour haul, right? So I can't just like go there and see a show and go 12 home. 12
for me,
right? Adam.
12 for me. I really felt guilty about not making it to a John Gentile production yet, but that 12 hour drive.
Well, listen, when Glenn calls me up and says, "Hey, John, this is Glenn. We want to play Creep Records. You two can't come." Adam, one last question about this. Is Danzig screwing the pooch? You know, aside from the tickets being very expensive.
John, you're gonna get excommunicated.
Aside from the tickets being very expensive, it seemed to me that Danzig did the reunion pretty well. You know, they did about 13, 14 shows. You know, they all pretty much sold out. People, they all got pretty good reviews. You know, and he says, "All right, that's the review. This is it," and then it's over. You know, is he gonna, you know, screw it by doing too much?
No. Because these shows, they hit you with the bad part first. So the Misfits are getting back together. Everyone was super stoked. The tickets were $1 million. Everyone went crazy about that for a little while. But then like the shock of that wore off. And then that just became the reality of it. It's like, yeah, the Misfits are back together. They're playing these massive shows. They're highly in demand. And you're going to pay a couple $100 at least to go see one of them. So that is the reality of it. And as they've continued to play those shows, like that seemed to be the worst part. Glenn coming out and saying that, like, "Oh, we're only going to do 10 of these," or whatever. That was never that was never like part of the hook of this. That was just like everyone just kind of shrugged and went like, "Okay, you know, I guess it couldn't last forever. What are you going to do?" Right. Like that was never the part on which all of this hinge. So if all of a sudden you came out and it was like, "Oh, we're going to keep playing shows, but they're all going to be these big events," then, you know, for I think people would be largely okay with it. I think if all of a sudden they just became, you know, a band that's going to swing through Philly 3 times a year and play, you know, relatively modest venues at relatively modest ticket prices, then yeah, I could see the people that shelled out for the big events being a little steamed about it. But I don't think people were I don't think that the crux of the story was that they were going to be a limited engagement. I think the crux of the story was really like, you know, getting over that initial ticket price hump and then whatever.
I just had a thought, and I think not to draw this out, but I think they're doing the show, honestly, just because Danzig's back in town for Christmas. My friend and I went and saw Danzig on December 20th. It was a one-off show, December 26th, in the middle of Nowheresville, New Jersey. So he had to be home for Christmas. Like why else would they do a show in the middle of nowhere?
But his mother passed away just before the New Jersey show, so maybe what's he going home for?
Well, he's got brothers and cousins and that kind of thing. So, like, maybe he really
did. Do they have facial hair and their original noses?
Yeah, I guess so.
They probably all wear those gold Rams horn things. Hey, Adam mentioned, that's what I want. I want for the Misfits to tour so much that they drive their value down to the point where they're playing in the same clubs that Jerry owned these Misfits. That would be
Adam, as a fan of The Who, Jerry Only smashing no fewer than 6 bases on stage at Madison Square Garden.
Wow, awesome. One show?
In one show. Awesome.
They still have a sponsorship.
Or stupid.
It's only awesome if you put the broken base in the pile of already broken bases, and that pile continues to grow as the show goes on.
And then you start the pile on fire.
There's just a heap, and you keep building. Like, that's okay. If you just break it, and then, like, some roadie runs on and moves the debris off stage, and then you're just going to break one later, that you're just wasting money at that point. But if you're making a heap, that's where the difference is. You got to make a pile.
There you have it.
It's kind of cool, I guess.
All right. All right, we're going kind of long. What else do you want to talk about, John, here?
What do I want to talk about?
Do you want to talk about your buddies in Yellow Card? Or
I got one story. If we have time, we'll get to that. If not, then we won't. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Tom and Adam hate talking about it. I love talking about it. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is yet again named its new nominees for 2020. The 2020 nominees are Motorhead. Put an asterisk next to that. Judas Priest, MC5, Notorious B.I.G., Whitney Houston, Soundgarden, T-Rex, Dave Matthews Band, Thin Lizzy, The Dubs, Pat Benatar, Nine Inch Nails, MC5, Kraftwerk, Depeche Mode, Rufus with Chaka Khan, and Todd Rundgren. Acts that have been named. Acts that have been named many times before that have not gotten in. Judas Priest, MC5, perennially overlooked. Kraftwerk, Nine Inch Nails. Thin Lizzy, I believe, Todd Rundgren, all named multiple times and have not gotten in. First time nominees, Dave Matthews Band, Whitney Houston, Soundgarden, and some others. As someone pointed out earlier today, I saw Link Wray, still not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's probably a crime.
And he's even dead.
The thing with Motorhead is they actually did not include all of the members of Motorhead in the classic lineup. People complained so much that they amended their statement to include the classic lineup of the band.
I love that. See? Power to the people.
It's very unusual for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to walk back on a stance in a situation like that. There have been many other times when people have said, oh, so-and-so should be nominated, and the Rock Hall did not budge. I think this is the first time that they've ever budged on including other members in the Rock Hall. Not that the Rock Hall is legitimate or valid. I mean, if Link Ray's not in, why the hell is, what the hell's his name? Bon Jovi in? Like, how is Bon Jovi before Link
Ray? Well, and, and Soundgarden will probably get in a sympathy vote. And yeah. I'm sorry, I don't mind Soundgarden, but Judas Priest should be in before Soundgarden.
Well, definitely. But honestly,
I mean, Rufus and Chaka Khan, could you freaking give me a break, John? I know you're more open minded musically than I am, and you like lots of different stuff, but Rufus and Chaka Khan?
Well, Rufus and Chaka Khan is very important in late 70s funk.
I'm baiting you.
But that begs the question, is it the Rock Hall of Fame or is it the Popular Music Hall of Fame? And I'm fine either way, but let's be clear about it.
Bon Jovi deserves to be in the Rock and Hall of Fame before Rufus and Chaka Khan because Bon Jovi meets the criteria of being rock and roll.
Well, I would not disagree with you that if it's truly the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Bon Jovi should be in before Chaka Khan, but so should, Hanson. You know what I mean? Like, before Hanson, Nelson. Judas Priest, as much as they probably should get in, last year was the first nomination, and they tanked. They did not do well at all.
But they were so influential,
I hear you, but the voters don't care, So anyway, we usually take our vote. I think 7 people get in, so I'm going to do my vote, and I'm always wildly off, but here's my vote is who's going to get in. Motorhead, Whitney Houston, Soundgarden, Nine Inch Nails, I want to say Kraftwerk, but no, it'll be Depeche Mode. I got 2 more. Notorious B.I.G. and Thin Lizzy. That's who I think is going to get in.
Ugh. Motorhead should be in. MC5 should be in. Judas Priest should be in. I can't remember what the rest of them are.
Kraftwerk should be in.
I mean,
if we're being honest, Kraftwerk should get in before Nine Inch Nails, but that probably won't happen.
Yeah, there literally would not be Nine Inch Nails without Kraftwerk,
But, I mean, MC5's not in, and a bunch of wannabe, bands that are you know, don't even deserve to polish the MC5 sneakers are in too. So
yeah, how easy is that Bon Jovi's in before MC5? You know what
it's
I mean?
Just so it's so annoying. I even hate to legitimize it by giving them any, you know, attention at all. I mean, it's all fine and good to go walk around and look at Jim Morrison's leather jacket. I'm not opposed to it. I'm entertained by it. But to consider it anything worthy of any significant thought is insulting.
Can someone answer me a question about the Rock Hall? And I assume you Americans can answer this because you go there all the time.
Yes, yes. I'm 5 hours away. I drive there every other weekend.
Yeah. So
to look at Jim Morrison's report card.
So they keep bringing in bands. They're not expanding the pyramid or whatever the fuck that building is that this is in. So as they're cycling these bands in, do the bands that have already been inducted, do they just get like their shit shoved in a storage locker at some point and then that's
the answer is yes. The answer is yes. That is true.
Because this is not like an ever expanding exhibit. Like there are real estate limits to that building, especially given that it is a pyramid, which is a really horrible use of space.
So like Dee Dee Ramone's leather jacket's in the basement.
Yeah.
It's like in a box.
It's like on the coat rack where people put their coats.
So like at a certain point is just being in the Rock Hall essentially being, you know, listed on a Wikipedia page, but there's no actual real world
consequence to this. The top floor, I've only been there once, and it's been, gosh, my son, who is 20 now, he was walking, but he was basically in a stroller. So it was probably 19 years ago or something. I don't know. But the very top floor is a constantly rotating exhibit. So they are able to work some of that stuff in. Like when we were there, it was 80s hip hop. But I know they've done like punk on that floor. And there's a certain amount of stuff that kind of is always there. I'm always amazed how tiny these little freaks are. I mean, like Mick Jagger, I could carry three of them over my shoulder, I swear.
Mick Jagger's like 6'2".
But he's so skinny.
He's skinny.
I don't think I get his pants around my leg.
I'll never forget a photo I saw. It was him and Taylor Swift singing together on the same microphone, and Mick Jagger's legs are skinnier than Taylor Swift's leg.
She's tall, too, but I didn't know Mick Jagger was tall. I actually was kind of incredulous of that, but
fit, like, Danzig in a suitcase?
Danzig's short, but he's stocky. Mick, let's see. I swear I've Googled this before, and I swear we've argued about Mick Jagger's height before.
Bruce Springsteen's small.
A lot of these guys are small. You know who's tall? Like Michael Jackson was tall.
I didn't know that. I thought he was short.
No, he's tall.
Oh, holy shit. Was it with you guys that I was talking about?
He's 5'10", John.
The celebrity heights.
5'10".
The creepy celebrity heights website.
76 years old. Holy crap. Keith Richards 5'9", so they're both fairly short. Well, no, that's pretty normal.
I think Mick Jagger's taller than that.
It says 5'10", John. What do you know?
So,
which is not short. It's very normal. I mean, in Great Britain, where the sun never shines, that's damn near, you know, monstrous.
So here, listen to this. I found this thing on the internet. If you're looking up what any celebrity's height is, there is some weird shit celebrity heights website that is out there. And the way that they measure these various celebrities is that they go to like conventions where you can go meet and greet, you know, various celebrities, like a lot of pop culture people that I guess would meet you at a convention. And they stand next to them and have their picture taken. And then they use the guy who's getting his picture taken with the celeb as the benchmark height guy. And then they compare it to that guy. So every time you go to if you were to go type in some random celebrity and then space height in Google, you end up on this weird website where it's just the same dipshit in every single picture standing next to all these celebrities. And then they're basically adding or removing inches based on the known height of the guy who runs the website. It's weird.
That's how you do science, it's Adam. Weird. You have a control. It's how science is done. You have to have a control group, and you have to. That's funny. Joey Ramone, 6 foot six. Ramone, 5 foot five.
While we're talking about it, I'm not trying to be a dick, but I've got a friend who goes to like these horror conventions and stuff, and like pays to like meet like Elvira for like 5 seconds.
Right.
Like,
so then you take a picture with you and Elvira, and then you know how high you are, so then you can extrapolate how high Elvira is. That's what this website is.
But I always think that's. I agree, John. I think that's kind of sad. I think it's sad for the people who have to do it to make a living, and I think it's. Like, what kind of an authentic experience is that when you're paying for the autograph? Like, I'm gonna go have my picture case taken with Kane Hodder, and he's gonna hold his machete up to my neck or something. Like, what am I gonna do with this?
That's a great question. But it's a little undignified to me, you know.
It's undignified. It's undignified for the people paying the money, but I think it's more undignified for the people doing it. I mean, I guess I don't begrudge anybody a living, whatever they got to do, but. So we go to a con. We have a halfway decent con here. And I missed last year, but I usually take my sons every year. And we just stand there and watch these people interacting with these celebrities. I don't know if it's – I don't know what it is, John. I'm not – it's not my thing. And then the worst thing is when there's nobody at their booth and you just look at the sad celebrities just sitting there by themselves.
So
I saw Uhura sitting on this like big throne and – it was like $100 to get your picture taken with her or something.
Yeah, like that feels
there was
like
nobody talking to her. She was just like sad sitting there with her handler.
I can't figure out if they're just laughing their way to the bank because people are spending money to get their picture taken with them, or if that is just incredibly demeaning, is to have to sit there and wait for someone to come spend money on it. Now, my barber,
I guess it's better than working at a gas station or something. Not that there's anything wrong with working at a gas station, but it does seem sort of sad.
My barber is. Good friends with the gentleman that puts on the Niagara Falls Comic Con, and he manages to like set up a barber chair in like, I don't know, like the green room of the con, and just like hangs out and all these celebrities and like, and you know, genre actors and stuff like that, you know, they'll wander by and be like, you know, hey, you want a free trim? And he'll trim all these like actors, you know, before the show. And the one year,
he's collecting DNA so he can clone them and sell them.
The best thing is that the one year Marky Ramone was there, because Marky is not above appearing at a con for you to pay him to get your picture taken with him. But Marky wouldn't take a free haircut because that's kind of his brand.
He wears a wig. Does
he wear a wig?
He wears a freaking helmet. Yes, it's so widely known.
Well, I mean,
I'm anti-Marky right now. I got to tell you, and I love all the Ramones, past, present, and future, except for Klemberg. I don't consider him a real Ramon.
But you like Klemberg?
Yeah, I don't have anything against him. But he played two shows with the Ramones. He was never a Ramon. But Marky's book. Didn't you guys get a chance to read Marky's book?
Nah, he seems a little cocky for Marky's.
Marky's a dick. And not only that, but he made some really, really serious accusations against his former bandmates that are dead that can't defend themselves. I thought it was really low class. And my understanding is Marky always has like a political axe to grind. So I'm a little, well, other people are like, well, you know, who would know if not him? I'm like, well, you know, he might have an agenda too. Marky was no saint. And he's, you know, he's pretty up for admitting that. But anyway. I'm on an anti-Marky kick right now since I read his biography. I think he's kind of a dickhead.
I'm on a pro CJ kick since I saw him live. It was great.
CJ seems like he has a really good attitude about the whole situation. Richie also actually seems like kind of a dick. But I haven't read his book yet. But I read all the Ramones books. I love the Ramones. I mean, Blink-182 might have been my gateway, but I love the Ramones.
All right, what else are we doing, John?
I think we can call this bad boy a Marky.
We've angered enough people for the day. We can go home now.
Good night.
Good night and good luck.